Well, hello everybody and welcome. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. This is the 361st week of our Turning Towards Life conversation, which began nearly 8 years ago, I think. Lizzie, we're heading towards that. So, Lizzie, hello and welcome. It's so good to be with you again. And to all of you who are with us, hello and welcome. You'll know. I always say this, I think, when I'm beginning. It's so wonderful to have some of you who've been here pretty much since the start, or maybe from the start, and others of you who are finding us only now, and people who listen or watch every week, and people who dip in when it feels like we might need meet some need or some longing. All of that is wonderful. So thank you for choosing to give us your ears and your minds and your hearts and your attention when there are so many other things in the world that call for our attention. I know this conversation, Lizzie, between you and me is between you and me, but it's also happens because it's on the in between of so many people from all over the world. So that's wonderful. And if you want to, you can go and check out Third Space. We are thirdspace.org, which is the collective from which this conversation was born and which it's part of, and we are up to all kinds of wonderful, rich, deep, life-giving, exciting things, all connected with the world in one way or another of coaching and our development as people, as humans in the world. So please feel very welcome to head over there or to head to turningtowards.life, where you'll find lots of ways to support us and also all of the previous conversations. And we know, Lizzie, that because I'm beginning, it means that you have chosen the source that's going to be like the wellspring for today's conversation. So I am very gladly handing over to you.
Thank you, Justin. I want to just say a quick hello to my friend Ed, who's currently recovering from a stroke in hospital in Glasgow. And he has started to listen to the podcast because I sent it to him as a kind of response and said, often people say to us that they listen to the podcast during any kind of medical treatments or recovery periods or times when they are in a process that's difficult. And he said, "Oh, great, I'll have a listen." And so I just want to say hello and tell people that if you know someone who's in a process like that, it's often really helpful for them to have this podcast as something that gets them through the day, helps them go to sleep, is being listened to while they're doing something hard. And I'm really glad that Justin, we can be that in the world amongst many other things. Like you said, some people are really busy and listening on the train and just carrying on with normal life. And other people are in big interruptions, big things that aren't the normal course of life. And I think this is something that's really supportive inside those moments. So to anybody who's listening from that space, a special hello to you today. And I have bought this source, which is by the wonderful Sibomfu Somé. And I'm really, really curious to see how this pans out in terms of what we learn from each other, Justin, and what arises and what we learn from ourselves. I mean, I think that's the thing for me is that as I'm speaking, whenever we talk, but I things arise that are new to me, that I what I'm saying becomes something I'm learning from the conversation, not really that I already know or something. I'm really grateful for that, and this feels like that. It's from a sweet and wonderful and deep and profound book called The Spirit of Intimacy, this little passage, and it's a really wonderful gift that this book exists in the world. So I'm going to read as we usually do, Justin, and then you can go and we'll see how we fare. So, one of the principles of the Dogara concept is of relationship that is not private. When we talk about our relationship in the village, the word our is not limited to two. And this is why we find it pretty hard to live in relationship in a modern culture that is lacking true community. In the absence of community, two people are forced to say this relationship is ours, when in fact a community should be claiming ownership.
Reminder to everyone, you can always find the sources in the notes, the show notes, and on our website, all of those places. One of the principles of the Daguerre concept of a relationship is that it's not private. When we talk about our relationship in the village, the word our is not limited to two. And this is why we find it pretty hard to live a relationship in a modern culture that is lacking true community. In the absence of community, two people are forced to say, this relationship is ours, when in fact, a community should be claiming ownership.
Thanks, Justin. So, this little place I'd like to begin and wonder about is all of the weddings I've been to, or the ceremonies where people get joined together by language and ritual. And there has always been, in every single one I've attended, this moment where all the guests are called upon to say, does everyone here present support this union in some way? And a declaration, like a noise or a show of hands or something that gives the guests, the people attending, supporting, gives a chance to say yes, to be declarative about, yes, I will be a supporter of this relationship, or I will be here if they need us, or something. And it's funny, what's springing to mind, Justin, I have this game that I play with my little girl where she makes me do a marriage between two ducks. And the whole thing is about the congregation supporting the ducks. Like, that's the basically all we talk about is how the congregation supports the ducks. And it's just very silly. But it really is a thing that has like stuck in my heart every time I've made those declarations. Like, I've taken it really seriously and also been really curious because of how little opportunity I ever get to be that support to people inside relationship. It's like our culture, as Zubonfu is saying in this passage, our culture in some way tells us that whatever goes on inside a marriage or a partnership or whatever needs to stay behind closed doors. And there are these sayings like, oh, don't wash your dirty linen in public. And, no one else wants to know what's going on. And as far as anyone else knows, we're a nice, normal family kind of thing. And so there's a kind of way that culturally we don't talk about things outside of the four walls of our homes when it's about our most intimate and also most focused and most precious relationships. And I'm really curious about that. And the other day, I did actually have we were with a friend, and something came up between me and my husband, and we actually spoke about it as if we were having the discussion, the argument ourselves, but somebody else was with us. And it was so vulnerable. I completely understand the experience of wanting to keep it private, because I'm part of this too, obviously. But I wondered which way around it was. Is it that I'm not allowed to share in public or with anyone else what's going on in my relationship, and that's why it's vulnerable? Or is it vulnerable, and so that's why I don't share it with everyone? I'm really, really questioning what that is and the power of culture. Like, we talk about that all the time. The power of all of the messages that say you can do this and you can't do that is the kind of thing that creates so much vulnerability and so much, oh gosh, should this be being said? And the cool thing that happened in that instance was that the person who was with us, I had the story, oh, they're just going to run a mile. They're going to think we're completely bonkers and they're just going to run and we'll never see them again. And that didn't happen. Because on the inside, everybody knows that everybody's in some relationship kerfuffle at some point or another. Everyone knows it's hard to live together. Everyone knows it's we become things that we didn't even know we could become inside of an intimate relationship, and we're shocked at ourselves sometimes, and we suddenly don't know ourselves, and it's hard, and all of those things are real in people's experience, but because they're not shared on the outside, there's this big question as to whether it's real, and maybe I'm the only one who's lost the plot inside my own house, and maybe I'm the only one who feels this kind of shame. Maybe I'm the only one. And so there's a way that this kind of invisible message of you've got to keep it all private is just has power over us, and it has the power to keep us all separate too. So we don't feel the relief of each other's stories or the relief of each other's kerfuffles, knowing that we're not alone and that maybe this is normal, that this is what marriage is like. And I have a lot of grief because many times before I've even heard about it, somebody's getting divorced, or a huge big family situation is arising. And I feel sad that we didn't talk about that like 4 years ago. And what was I doing if I was at the wedding and I said, yes, I will be of support, and then I didn't get to do anything at all? So that's my questioning and my wondering. And I love that this is written in this way, because I do feel like we could have a world where we're not alone in our relationships, and we're able to process them with one another, and not only in the intensity of a one-on-one situation.
Oh, brilliant, Lizzie. My goodness, there's so much to say about this, both from the original source and from everything that you're saying. Oh. One of the things I was thinking was, first of all, there's a similar in the spiritual path that I have grown in. When two people get married, there's a canopy that represents a home under which the people who are getting married get married, and it's open on all sides. Very, very deliberately, as a symbol of the very thing that's in this text, which is that this relationship is yours, but it's also everyone's, like in a community. But then, as you say, theoretically, it's the same structure that you're talking about from weddings that you've been to. Theoretically, that's the case. And there's a moment where if you participate in a ritual like that, and those rituals are so important, that you feel maybe pulled into the collective nature of this. But then the day ends and we all go back to our ordinary lives, which are quite different from that. And that moment where we got a taste of what it would be like to somehow to be in something together vanishes, because the culture and the structures that many of us are in don't support it in exactly the way that you're saying. So it's I think one of the encouraging things is, and obviously there are lots of new kinds of rituals and ceremonies that are being made these days to celebrate the formalization in some way of all kinds of patterns of relationship, and many of them have the same thing. But the whole point about doing it with other, make doing a ritual with other people to name a moment where some people say to one another, yes, you, and yes, you, and we're in something together with some degree of commitment and intent and everything. The whole reason to do it with other people is in the spirit of this text, I think. And then the rest of life doesn't support us. And one of the ways that I was thinking about it, it's very, was feeling into your experience of making available a phenomenon in your own marriage to somebody else because it happened to be happening there, and what that's like, sort of like the welcome and the fear and the everything that come with it. And where I wanted to try and go with this was, there's two different levels to this. So one is that all of us can wonder about our own practices in everything. So we can wonder about our practices in our intimate relationships, like how much do we keep private and how much do we reveal? That's a practice. Do we only have these conversations here, or do we have them here? It's a practice. And the culture supports the practice or not. So we might have a practice of being very, very transparent everywhere and find that everybody runs away. And because the culture, so there's sort of a certain amount that we can work with that. And then we can also wonder about the culture. Like, we can start to use it as a way to see what we're swimming in, which is very, very helpful indeed. Because we may or may not, I imagine you may find that if you're just completely transparent, I certainly think this would be the case if I was completely transparent everywhere about dynamics in the relationship with the person I'm married to, some people would run away and some people would stay and some people would be terrified and I might be terrified. But what it points to is something that you've been pointing to very beautifully, I think, in what you've been saying, which is to start to see that many of us live in a culture where the predominant understanding of being a person is separation, is separateness. So it applies to the way that we think about intimate relationships like marriages and civil partnerships and other sort of long, maybe short or long-term intimate arrangements. We think of them as completely private. And it affects how families are raised for many of us because we think of the family as private, where it used to be shared in a way in the culture, in the part of the world in which we live. It 4 or 5 generations ago, for many people, there was probably much more of a sense of it being shared in extended families and beyond families, to extend it that way. But it also us, each of us personally, because that all the inner relationships I have in me that aren't even with another person, it's really easy to see those as separate. Like that's just what's happening inside me. It's the same phenomenon. And it's untrue that they're private. It's actually untrue. So if I imagine that you aren't affected by what's going on in me, I've really misunderstood what's going on here. And I've misunderstood because we have a story that we're somehow like isolated, like billiard balls. We bump into one another once in a while, but we're sort of separate objects. And if I think that you are someone who's not affected by my relationship with the person I'm married to, whether you're with us or whether you're just with me, if I think that that's not showing up here, I've also misunderstood, because I think it's really true that we're way more open to one another and affected by one another than we know, sort of on that level. But it's also the case that, and this is going to be that's a bit tricky to say, and I'll see if I can say if you go out into your garden, I know you've got magnolias in your garden, and you look at the magnolia, you've got inside you the magnolia. And there's the magnolia, like the physical magnolia that anyone could come and see. And then there's the way the magnolia lives inside you, Lizzie. And that is also part of the magnolia. How it lives in you isn't not the magnolia. And you go off and you carry that around with you, and it's there with you all the time. So you're not separate from it in that way either. And that's true of all of this too. So I live in you just as you live in me, because you have. There's a whole way in which I show up in the experience of being a person that you are, and there's a whole way that you show up. And then I know it's true that there's a way that you and your relationship with your husband show up in me. And who's to say that the way it shows up in me isn't some part of what it actually is, just like your sense of the magnolia, as I know. So it's actually not even just a sort of, wouldn't it be good if we all could sort of have a sense of some kind of collective endeavor around acknowledging that there are things in our intimate relationships that we do keep that are the part of what makes them intimate is that there's privacy in it, but that it also actually also belongs in all of us all the time is true. And maybe one of the great sources of suffering for many of us is that we've so internalized the story of separateness that we don't even begin to get that we live inside one another. We and our relationships live inside one another all the time, which is what the symbolism of a wedding ceremony actually evokes. It sort of makes it public for a moment. And we all go, oh, we're sort of somehow we're implicated here. Last thing is, so then I wonder what happens if we begin to. One way to go would be to sort of get radically transparent everywhere, and that may or may not be a good thing to do. Would be wonderful in some ways and difficult in other ways. But maybe another way to go is to start to really, really see how all of this belongs inside everyone, and start to wonder about what does that mean, that what I take to be private isn't really, it's affecting everyone around.
The thing that's coming to me, Justin, is one of the kind of ground rules that you and I know about in our work with the groups that we have, which I'm not sure we talk about that much, but it's present and it's a big, strong intention, which is my sister tells it in the story of a tailor that her, she says, I don't know what her source is, but anyway, she tells it in the story of a tailor where a tailor looks at his client and doesn't just give them, doesn't measure them once and then give them the same size clothes every time they come in for a new outfit. He measures them every time because they're probably different today than they were yesterday. And the reason I'm saying this is because I can see that that's not what we do in our culture. Like you say, you live in me, but I have the habit of kind of fixing you in me as whatever my judgments are about you and my assessments and all that stuff. And how capable am I of seeing you wherever I see you and re-receiving you as news, brand new every time? Actually, Justin, you've talked about this in the context of your marriage, of like, you know, lying next to somebody that you've been with for decades and feeling them anew in each day. And that's not a kind of normal thing to be doing. It's that's a very conscious and intentional thing. And I think because we're not up to that, it's so much harder to, you know, the nature of a relationship is that it's changing all the time, and that who we are and what we think is different every day about everything. And so if we were to give anybody a snapshot of that, we kind of also know that maybe we're not beings in this culture at this time who go, oh, that's what Justin's being like today, or that's what Justin thinks today. I wonder what he'll think tomorrow. We think, my goodness, he's a bit bonkers, isn't he? Or, you know, and there's these kind of assessments made based on a moment of sharing something that probably are different in the next 10 minutes. But it's like we don't typically allow each other the grace to be a different person one moment to the next. And so, and we don't see each other one moment to the next either because of the way that we live. We live very separately from one another. And so, you know, like with the children, we just kind of say, oh, yeah, well, they're probably hungry. But we don't like pin them down to being the kind of person who does the thing that they do when they're hungry. We just think, oh, well, they're hungry. We'll give them some food and then things will just move along. And who they are to us is minorly affected by that little event that happened. We don't give that grace to each other ordinarily. And so to bring our relationship things into the open, I suppose what I'm saying is, how do we become people that give everybody a lot of leeway to be whoever they are in whatever moment and know that it's probably going to be different in the next moment? And if we could be those kinds of people, maybe it would be easier for us to share with one another without feeling like we were going to be judged and pinned down and assessed as a certain kind of person. Because the nature of relationship is it's just one continual, full-on process all the time. It's a process that's unfolding and is mysterious, and we don't really know what's going on anyway, even if we think we do. And if we only saw one tiny bit of it and judged it based on the tiny bit we saw, we would be really wrong. You know, we really would. And I've been wrong 100,000 times. And it's a little bit like when something is happening in a relationship and people say, oh, you know, this is what's going on. But one person says that to you and you take sides, you say, oh my God, I can't believe that. And they're a terrible person and I can't believe this. And then the next day they're back together again and everything's okay. And you took a side. And it's like, oh no, that can't be what, you know, that doesn't have a place here anymore because now I'm in service to the togetherness, not to the individual story about what was going on. And I'm sure many people have had that experience of kind of stating their opinion, and then suddenly the people are back together again, and we have to relate to them as a unit, not as a two individuals. And I think that's part of this too, is, you know, how do we become ones who allow everyone to be who they are as themselves individually today, but also how do we allow a relationship to be what it is today, knowing that tomorrow it will probably be different. Because that's just the nature of process. And each of us, either individually or collectively, or as two people, as a family, is a continually unfolding something that needs our holding, that needs our loving, intentional attendance rather than our fixing down and our judging and our, oh dear, they're that kind of person. And then maybe it would be easier. Maybe we could make it easier for these things to be shared and for us not to feel so alone in the most powerful and intimate place in our lives, because we could be that kind of openness and curiosity for one another's process.
Yeah, I love this way of talking, Lizzie. It's reminding me a couple of things. So one is a wonderful book by, I think it's a wonderful book by Alan de Botton called The Course of Love. And there's a place in the course of, which is about intimate relationships. And there's a place in the course of love where he says, if you marry someone, you have to, it's really helpful to understand you're marrying an unfolding life, not a fixed person. So if you go into a marriage imagining that the person you're marrying, with the idea that the way you decide how who to marry is because you think all of the qualities that the person has, maybe how they conduct themselves, or maybe even how they look, or you know whatever it is, that's oh great you, and then you don't realize that because they're an unfolding process, they are going to change and you are going to change over time. If you can't get with that, you're in trouble. You're in real trouble because 10 minutes down the line, you're both different. So then what? So then what are you marrying? And he says, really, what you're marrying is life. And everything that you're talking about, I think, is just gets into this misunderstanding that we have, that we've got into, particularly for those. I mean, I think it's probably worldwide in many ways because this way of thinking has spread across the world, but it's not uniform, and but it's particularly grown up in the parts of the world we grow up, Lizzie, is not only we're separate, we're things. But we're more like another metaphor I came across, which I really love. We're more like whirlpools, like eddies in a current. Like there's a river, great river flowing. You go and see a whirlpool in the river, and you can point to it where there's a whirlpool in the river. You go, there's a whirlpool. You can see it. It's a thing, but it's not a thing. It's a process, and it's drawing in what's around it, and it's shaping what's around it, and it only keeps going as long as the process goes. The whirlpool isn't a thing in and of itself. If the process stops, the whirlpool's gone, but the river's still there. And we're like that. So inside an intimate relationship or a friendship or a parent-child relationship or, you know, whatever, getting that we're processes, we're unfolding process. But the other thing is, like whirlpools, we just really are affecting one another all the time. And so the idea that, so when we, the mistakes we make when we go, I'm fixed and I'm a thing and I'm separate, gets us in terrible trouble, but it's the predominant narrative that we live in. And it leads to all kinds of structures and ways of talking and not. And then we imagine that it's not just flowing out into everything. So I'm really with you that the starting to ask the question, which ha also has been, if I think about what the practice that we have at the heart of our work, Lizzie, and the heart of what we teach, which we call coaching, which is a highly problematic word in many ways because it means so many different things. But if I think about what it is, one way you might say it is it's a real aliveness to process and the opportunity to bring, to make explicit what's going on in the process in us and between us, to bring it out into the world, and then to be very, very curious and interested in it, and then to wonder about it and appreciate it, and also to address the suffering as well as the joys in it by shifting how we talk and move and feel and relate. That's what we're up to. And very often, when we're coaching in that way, what we get to do with our clients is talk about things that don't come into the public domain very often, but probably should. And I know that as I've both practiced being a coach and also have been coached and also have been in these kinds of conversations, I'm able to be way more transparent than I was of things that are actually already transparent. It's not that they're not transparent. Many of them just are actually out happening in the world, whirlpooling alongside other whirlpools. And it really does, it's not, I'm trying to be really clear here. It's not just that talking about them is a good thing. Sometimes it's a great thing, and sometimes it's not. It's really understanding that this source that we're reading just is true. Whatever you do with it, we all belong to one another, and our relationships belong to the community, even if the community that we're part of is one in which we all feel terribly separate to one another and isolated from one another, and we hardly know our neighbours, and we That kind of setup that's so common, the same phenomenon is still happening. And then all of this wonderful source and this conversation raises a different question, which is how do we want to respond to it? Because it's not, I think, often working very well that we continue to imagine that we're separate, isolated things and not flows, whirlpools that are whirlpooling alongside other ones, or flows that are.
Just had another thought as well, Justin. In our work, we would purposefully set up a group, for example. So I have my peer supervision group where I bring myself to the group intentionally to be supported in the work that I do with people. And that is explicit. We write down why we're here, what we're doing, what it's for, when we're going to meet. All it's very, very organized. And how come there isn't a thing in the world where we say, okay, so for this relationship, we are going to have monthly support from this part of the community that we really trust and we really love and we know really see and love us. And we are going to organize ourselves to have a support system that allows us to have a practice of support so that we don't wait 7 years until everything's irreparable, but we have an ongoing something with members of our community, people that love us, that we love, to purposefully be in the conversation about what's happening in our relationship. Like maybe that exists, and if anybody knows what that is and has any conversation about that, I'd love to hear from you. But I just think it's like I can see what we value and what we don't value in outer terms. Like clearly, my work life is valued in an overt way more than my marriage is valued, which is bonkers because so much of the foundation of whether we can go out and do the work that we do in the world lies at home in our foundations. And so I just have this little kind of vision emerging of what would that be that in relationship we could seek support from those who we trust and love and would want to be in that process with and purposefully meet in service of a relationship. And what's happening and put it out there, even in a small way. So it's not like we're being telling the world everything all the time or something, but that we have a support structure that's normal for our relationships and our foundational, important, central place that we put ourselves and experience ourselves and eddy around with each other. That feels very normal to me as I'm saying it, and yet I don't know that it exists anywhere. And I would quite like that. Actually, very much like Oh, so I want to say thank you to this source, to Siobhan Foo, so mate, for having been a wonderfulness that generated all of these insights in her book. I want to say thank you to you, Justin. I want to say thank you to everyone. And I love this particular conversation to me is like gold. Because it really helps. It's like I had that thought of being the person at the wedding and being confused as to why that never ever came to fruition. And I'm actually having the conversation I really would want to have about it and taking my thoughts and thinking further and wondering. And thank you for being able to do that with me and wanting to do that with me, Justin. And thank you to everybody for listening. And we will be back next Sunday with a source from Justin.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.